a lot of focus has been on mapping raw materials back to source, especially in connection with the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act. That act has such a focus on what are the raw materials here? Where are the minerals being pulled out of the ground? Or where's the silica coming from? Or where's the cotton coming from? But I think there has been less of a focus on what happens after those things are pulled out of the ground or harvested from the fields. How do they get to you? And that center part of the supply chain, the logistics part, is also rife with opportunity for human trafficking.
Human trafficking doesn't always take the form we first imagine. It can be found at almost any level of an organization's supply chain. What can compliance professionals do to assess human trafficking risk, and how can they leverage the resources of the organizations they work for to help root out this tragic problem? Gwen Hassan is here to help. This is Hidden Traffic.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Hidden Traffic. I am your host, Gwen Hassan, and this is a newsy episode, an update of things that are going on around the spectrum of human trafficking prevention, forced labor prevention within supply chains. I have a bunch of different news pieces and sources for you in this episode. So let's dive in. First of all, friend of the podcast, prior guest, a group that is a not-for-profit consortium of practitioners, specifically in kind of cybersecurity, that work on prevention of human trafficking, have created a group called Follow Money, Fight Slavery. And they have a summit and recently had their third annual summit, their 2023 version. And they have very generously included all of the materials, including recordings of each session that took place during the summit, on their website. And it includes a recorded version of their live keynote address, which was from a woman who is a survivor of human trafficking with lived experience as a victim. She was originally from Budapest, Hungary, and was trafficked as a younger woman and now lives in Canada, and shared her experience as a victim of human trafficking and now as an advocate. She does a great deal of advocacy work in this area and provides survivor-led human trafficking prevention training. So I really recommend not only her keynote address, which you'll see there, but also the other 9 sessions that are included on their website. So again, it's followmoneyfightslavery.org is the name of the organization, and you can find their third annual summit materials out there, free and available on their website. So number one. Number two, Unseen UK, another organization that has been on the podcast before, has started a petition, and you can sign their petition on their website, Unseen UK, and it is a petition to the UK government asking them to finally fill the empty chair. And they have a lovely empty chair graphic on their website, because the independent anti-slavery commissioner role for the UK has been vacant for over a year now. So this petition aims to get people to join them in nudging or downright pushing the UK government to fill that important role, to lead human trafficking prevention efforts within the UK. So if you are so interested, feel free to log on to their website and sign the petition, add your name to the growing clamor for the UK to appoint someone to this open role. Next item, the Mekong Club, yet another guest of the podcast. As a matter of fact, my very first podcast guest here on Hidden Traffic was from the Mekong Club, their founder, Matt Friedman. They have now collaborated with CNN, and they held they called it My Freedom Day event. It was held in Hong Kong, but it included thousands of students from well over 100 countries, as well as kind of online discussions, and there were art exhibitions and video campaigns all around the idea of training students on human trafficking and what it is, how to prevent it, how to recognize it, etc. And one of the things they did was what they call their sweatshop challenge. And there is a video now on YouTube with CNN that talks to a few of the students and kind of reviews with them what the sweatshop challenge was and how they felt about it and kind of what they learned from going through this demonstration and simulation of what it's like to work in a sweatshop. So I recommend that to you. You can find it on the Mekong Club's website as well as by searching YouTube for it. It'll pop up under Sweatshop Challenge and CNN. One of the things that I really was impressed about from this video, and you know, feel free to view it, they use a very tactile, easy method of having students do a repetitive activity over and over for a period of time and then simulate what it might be like to do that for 12 hours or 14 hours in an unventilated space, in an environment where people are yelling at you or where you don't get breaks or where you haven't eaten. It really struck me as an interesting way to bring the idea of what it's like to be a victim of human trafficking to a real emotional and tangible place for people. And I started thinking about its application to corporate America. And could you do a similar type of sweatshop challenge for your supply chain workers, for people that are out there in your corporate purchasing departments who are buying from foreign suppliers? So they have a real personal understanding of what human trafficking does and how injurious it is to not only people physically, but emotionally, mentally, that might create that kind of emotional connection to the problem, which when you can create that kind of emotional connection, it no longer becomes about complying with a regulation. It becomes about acting in concert with your values and working into further what you value as a human being, which is a much deeper connection and I think a much more accessible place for people to think about human trafficking than simply as another regulation that we have to comply with. So I recommend checking out the video and thinking about whether you might be able to apply this sweatshop challenge to corporate training within your organizations. Even if on a small scale basis, I think it would be a fascinating effort. And I'm also quite sure that the Mekong Club would be happy to help you in setting up that kind of training if you were interested. All right, continuing with the Mekong Club, they have also just published a new white paper, and it is called Guide to Minimizing Modern Slavery in Shipping Supply Chains. You know, it's available also on their website, and it goes deep into the supply chain half that is dedicated to the logistics, right? So you're sourcing goods in a foreign country and they are brought to the port. And then what happens? Most often they are shipped somewhere on a maritime vessel. You know, it's coming across on a boat of some kind. There, you know, maybe trucking involved. There could be final mile, smaller delivery type of situations for the final mile of logistics delivery into your factory or your customer, your retail outlet. So it really delves into human trafficking within that logistics portion of your supply chain, areas of risk, case studies of where they've found issues related to trafficking. So I recommend it. A lot of focus has been on mapping raw materials back to source, especially in connection with the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act. That act has such a focus on what are the raw materials here? Where are the minerals being pulled out of the ground? Or where's the silica coming from? Or where's the cotton coming from? But I think there has been less of a focus on what happens after those things are pulled out of the ground or harvested from the fields. How do they get to you? And that center part of the supply chain, the logistics part, is also rife with opportunity for human trafficking. So I recommend that white paper to you also on the Mekong Club's website for your use. All right, next, just a news item. If you were not already aware, U.S. Congress had an executive commission on China hearing. It was a couple of weeks ago, and they entitled the hearing Implementation of the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act, the Global Supply Chain Impact, close quote. And it was a congressional hearing with witnesses called to discuss the impact of the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act on the U.S. supply chain, which sounds fairly innocuous, right? Like, oh, okay, great. They're wanting to know what the impact was, you know, what's the volume of goods that have been detained, how many have been released. But it went much further than that. And it seemed quite clear that Congress is pushing for an expansion of that UFLPA. There were significant conversations around electric vehicle battery components and the need for the U.S. government to start adding EV components, and specifically the electronics related to electric vehicles, to the list of goods that are an area of focus for U.S. Customs under the UFLPA. I mean, if you recall, we started out in a place where we were looking at silica, of course, for especially solar panels and materials, but also cotton for textiles and tomatoes. There seems to be a real push now that that list be expanded to specifically add electric vehicle electronics to it. So if your supply chain touches electric vehicle production, or for that matter, batteries or battery production, this could be an early warning signal that there may be additional enforcement focus coming for your supply chain. They also specifically wanted to discuss what is referred to as the UFLPA loophole. There is currently a provision within the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act that exempts from inspection goods that are coming in with a value of under $800. So if they're not being inspected, that means that they're also far less likely to be detained, absent some kind of outside tip or effort or focus. But routinely, shipments that have less than $800 in value are not inspected, which means that there are a number of fast fashion retailers that are shipping in goods from Asia, the region in general, and they specifically mentioned the company Shein, S-H, I think it's E-I-N, which is a fast fashion retailer, and how they were concerned, this congressional panel, that goods were coming in direct to consumers in small dollar values, you know, in shipments that had a value of $50 or $100 that were being made with cotton that had been harvested and grown using forced labor. So there seems to be a push to consider closing that loophole and getting rid of the $800 limit in terms of inspections. So if you are in kind of garments and fabric or shoes or apparel that may have a connection into Xinjiang, there may be kind of an additional push, especially around those typical fast fashion kind of retailers where, I mean, it hasn't happened yet, but indications are that it's an area of concern, at least amongst this congressional panel. And that can often be an early indicator of a change coming. So those are my news updates and resource tidbits for you for this episode. Thank you very much. Coming soon, I am working now on a new episode to cover the new Canadian law. Last week, Parliament in Canada approved their own Canadian Forced Labor Prevention Act. So stay tuned for another episode here in a couple of weeks about the new Canadian Forced Labor Prevention Act that I believe will have an effective date of 1/1/24. So if you have operations in or out or involving Canada, this will now be a new regulatory area for you to comply with as well. So stay tuned. Mm-hmm.